13, where the DTB is going to be, is 2.7 kilowatts. Now, after maximization, they'll be at 9.7 kilowatts. Cal 21 would be at...
Okay, so good news is happening as far as power output of the transmitter. But still, I think you're saying, even with maximization, the chances in this town are fairly poor. 10% of the population in Smithtown, even after maximization, will be getting over-the-air broadcast. Eric, go ahead.
All right, on the 17th, the game changes because, voila, we have VHF again. We have 7, we have 8, we have 9, we have 11, and we have 13. So, those folks are going to get something. And the other folks that were up at the higher UHF frequencies, they come down lower. So that improves their chances.
I got an answer for you, Dick, on that. The box is over.
Go ahead, Derek. I mean, Mel.
Okay. One of the guys that I deal with in the consulting and had a situation with a relative of his, and they are in Connecticut somewhere. Where the heck? Tell me, I forgot. In some part of Connecticut. And they couldn't do very much with the box until he got one particular box that seems to, he says, work better than the others. And now I'm just wondering, is there such a thing as the quality? Are they varying in quality from one box to the other? They all seem to come out at around a $20 bill plus the coupon, Dick. Maybe Eric can make some comments on that. And I don't know if I should mention the box that probably worked the best over.
We tell each other the real brand names here. We don't hold any punches because we're not making any money on this. What's the brand name that worked well, Mel? Go ahead.
Okay, you know, there's several boxes out there that, God knows, I didn't know who they are. So, you know, there's names that don't ever ring a bell to me, but except for one. And why I even said that, I don't know, but I said I heard that Zenith or Zenith Sub-30 or UEC is Zenith now, is making a box. I says, why don't you see about looking into that? And he says, he did. He got a Zenith box finally after running forth with a number of them. And the Zenith box seems to outperform them all. So maybe Eric can make some comments on what the heck is that, a better quality piece of equipment or what?
I'll answer that. Yeah, maybe it's a seventh generation or fifth generation. Wait for the beep and go right ahead, Mel. I mean, Eric.
It's a TT900, you remember a couple months back we talked about that. That has the fifth generation equalizer in it. And that little cheap box, which is made by LG, the Korean company, LG bought Zenith. Actually, I think it was 98 or 99. And anything with the Zenith name is actually manufactured by LG in Korea. But it's that 900 box that we talked about, remember?
Sure do. Okay. So look like that's one of the good ones. From what I'm hearing, Joe, I think the chances with your rooftop antenna of reasonable quality for the Zenith TT900 fifth generation equalizer type digital TV tuner or a set that contains something like that in it, I think your over-the-air reception from the Empire State Building, I would give you a 90% probability. On top of that, you're a smart enough guy that can put up a high enough gain antenna, and if need be, where you have to use a rotator, where you have to move it a little bit so that the multi-bounce, the multi-path that was giving the digital tuner a little bit of grief becomes more favorable when you squeeze the antenna back and forth. In fact, that's what Eric has done. When he takes his antenna, when he's listening in plain view and scoots it back and forth clockwise or counterclockwise, you know, turning it clockwise, yeah, you know, more to the north or more to the south when he's getting reception from Empire, his converter becomes happier and it doesn't have to work as hard to receive the digital signal. I think you've got a good probability. I'm going to pass it back to you, Joe, for comments on that. After that, I bet you're going to want to talk about OFDM. W2RYY, K2RYW on the TechNet.
Okay, very good, Dick. I'm about 49 miles line of sight from the center of Manhattan, not 35 miles. And being I'm on the South Shore, I don't have quite the shot at the city as people who live out near the bay or whatever. I'm about 2 miles, 2.5 miles from the water, so I got a little bit more terrain in the way. That's why I was worrying about how much signal level. Now, if you're talking about minus 20 dBmV, and they use that zero point at minus 47 dBm as a reference, so it means that from what you're saying, Eric, those boxes want to see a signal level of minus 67 dBm into them to work adequately, and nothing below that would really work correctly?
NYS.
Well, let's just put it this way. The normal input to an analog set would be the normal input to a digital set. Okay, and the average good signal level for an analog set starts at 0 dBmV. What? I think that's 60 microvolts or 1,000 microvolts, or 60 microvolts. I mean, it's not like having a 2 meter receiver that has sensitivity of 0.3, you know. I mean, you need a little bit of signal to make it go, but, you know, zero is really the proper level, but you can get those things to lock up as low as minus 20. That's kind of, you know, pushing it, but it'll do it.
I think 0 dBmV on a 70 ohm line is minus 48 dBm. So I think you're saying minus 68 dBm. And by the way, Joe, Sayville to me, I may be wrong, is either due south of Huntington where I live or a little bit further west of due south. I'm 35 miles airline distance from Empire State Building, 35, 36, something like that miles. We're not talking about driving distance here. We're talking about airline distance. Sayville, to me, is it that far east? Maybe it is a little bit further east of me. All right, I'm gonna accept your 40 miles. But still, I think you need a minus 68 dBm signal to get reception. And getting that with a reasonable, what's the word I'm looking for here? Rooftop antenna, particularly with a rotator, I think you're going to make it. Over to you, Joe, for any further comments on this. W2RYY, K2RYW.
NYS.
And I knew.
Go ahead.
NYS, please give us a full set of calls and a name, and then proceed with your comment if it's on this subject. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello, Dick. JR. W2NYS. Yeah, I just sent you an email. Actually, I got three of them. The one is the DTV antenna guide. The website, you type in your address for each your zip code, and gives you information on what kind of signal you're going to get in your area, and what kind of antenna to choose from.
C2DLS comment.
DLS recognized, stand by, please. NYS, JR, give us some more audio. I think you did mail that to me some time ago, a beautiful website where you give it your particular zip code or address or whatever. It tells you exactly how many miles and what signal strength and what digital signals you're going to hear and whatever. Is that a reasonable website address that you could give us over the air right now? Over to you, JR.
Yeah, well, I just emailed it to you right now, so you should have it. I'll have to look it up. Need be. And also, we went out and bought numerous different boxes, and we found the Zenith to work the best. We didn't install them upstate in the mountains, and we didn't have any problems really. So, if you need me to look that email address up, I'll go back to the computer.
AntennaWeb.org, Dick.
Okay, AntennaWeb.org, is that what you just said? www.antennaweb.org. Is that what you said, Eric? Web. JR. First. Oh, digital antenna distance guide. We'll open up that particular one. Sure enough, antenna. www.antennaweb, all lumped together. .org. /aw/address.alpha-sierra-papa-x-ray. So apparently that's the website that you type in your address and it tells you everything in your neighborhood. So from that you're going to find out pretty fast, Joe, where you stand. Mr. DLS, give us your full call, your name, and if you've got something to add to this particular subject, go right ahead. DLS, K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Yeah, K2RIW and then that K2DLS. Thanks a lot, Dick. You've got Dan here out in Aberdeen, New Jersey, which is about 25 miles south of Lower Manhattan, which probably sets at about, let's say, 30 or just under 30 miles or so south of Midtown. I'm an over-the-air television viewer currently watching exclusively digital, and the way I do it is I use my TiVo HD with a digital tuner, and I have a UHF-only television antenna up in the attic, more or less aimed between Manhattan and Long Island, because I also like to receive Channel 21. And that along with a, I believe it's a Channel Master 20-something dB UHF-only amp, and I get reasonable enough signal. Can't tell you, it can't give you signal measurement in dB, but a reasonable enough signal on all of the New York, the NJN suite out of, I think, Montclair, as well as Channel 21 in digital. And I'll tell you, it is quite a pleasure. So that's the story here. Back to you and the net, Dick, K2DLS.
And 2 hours, so.
RSO recognized. Get to you in a second. From Matawan, New Jersey, Dan is using a indoor UHF antenna. I presume, I think you said it's in the attic of the house. What does that UHF antenna look like, Dan? Go ahead.
This is the Radio Shack. It's a Yagi with a reflector, basically. It's an antenna that Radio Shack sold probably close to 20 years ago. It's UHF only, so it's got the Yagi boom and then the two reflectors at a 45-degree vertical above and down from the boom. So pretty typical design. Over.
Yeah, they don't make it anymore, Dick, and I have one on the move then.
Okay, Eric, do you think there is a substitute for that one that they're not making anymore?
I've got a couple of good ones, actually. I don't remember the names of them all, but that was it. From different manufacturers and all that stuff. Actually, interestingly, on the bus, that's what it means. They have to move, that's my concept.
You were very spotty into the machine that time. I was hearing you on the input. And so I think you're saying there is a substitute for that. Repeat what you believe is the substitute for that particular antenna, Eric, and I'll copy you on the input and repeat it to people. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
I don't know the name of the manufacturer. It's kind of it's a little obscure, the name. But there's a couple of them,
for
next week for that one.
Okay, Joe's willing to wait. Let's see what Frank's got to add to all this. In 2 hours, so go right ahead, Frank. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, good evening, Dick. At the beginning of the week, I sent you an email with the website address of WineGuard Company. If you recall, we were discussing their digital converter was the only one at least advertised as being able to be battery powered as well as using line voltage. The website is very simple. It's www.wineguard.com. Wineguard is spelled WineGard. And if my memory serves me, they were one of the manufacturers of the antennas sold by Radio Shack. the Archer antennas, I believe they were. And if you go to their website, they still sell antennas, both UHF and VHF. And I believe they have some specifically marketed for digital TV. Back to you, Dick, and to RSO.
Good to know, Frank. Out of curiosity, Frank, are you getting digital television reception in Wantagh? And if so, what's it like? Over to you, Frank.
No, not yet, Dick. I just ordered that WineGuard model. I used one of my coupons to get a $40 rebate on it. However, it seems to be so popular, that particular model, that they're out of stock, and I'm going to have to wait another 2 to 3 weeks, I believe, before they send it. I also ordered the battery pack for it, and I hope to give you a report on it when I do receive it.
That sounds good. Eric, if you're still within range, the WineGuard converter versus the Zenith converter, any feeling as to the relative performance of one versus the other? KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, particularly on the input. Go ahead.
I hope I'm making it through. I'll go upstairs in a minute. I just got into the driveway. You have to consider that WineGuard doesn't manufacture the electronics. They have it manufactured for them. If it's an LG box, then chances are they're equal. If it's a Chinese box, I suspect it is. A lot of the Chinese stuff still has third-generation equalizers in them, so I don't know what the answer is, but, you know, it's a 50-50 shot.
Okay, so if WineGuard has that manufactured for them by possibly Zenith, no problem for LG, the company who bought Zenith. But if it's a Chinese manufacturer, is what Eric is saying, which is third-generation, it may not be the latest and greatest on the equalizer network of the converter. But Eric is going to be gathering more. We're going to find out more and more. Interesting subject of digital television. And like every brand new technology, there's going to be some growing pains in the beginning until we get this all straightened out. But the world's not going to end, and we're all going to get the over-the-air reception who wants it bad enough. At least Mel and Dick have to get it that way, because these frugal guys refuse to buy cable, refuse to buy satellite, and refuse to do anything that's not free. For free, we'll take. For buy, we'll waste time. Isn't that true, Mel? K2RIW?
NNU.
NNU in a second. Go ahead, Mel.
This is K2KEY. Like I say, if you showed me something that is worth investing in on television, I would do it. It's far and few between. Once in a while, like Eric will throw on a decent program, so I throw them a few bucks at Channel 13 every year. And the rest of the time, there's nothing on. I'm not going to listen. Like I say, I have no interest in listening to those police melodramas and the lawyer melodramas and the hospital melodramas. I had enough of the hospital last week myself, so I don't want to live that when I get home. I had enough of it firsthand. And all that other nonsense. So if it wasn't for basically most of the week, I'd say I turn on to get the news and the weather. I don't think I would have a television even on at all, Dick. Over.
Query. Query recognized in a second. Mel, you're a bit unusual. The rest of us are fairly addicted. A person with query, give me your full call letters and your name, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, Dick, K2DLS again. Query on this digital television subject with regard to the channels. Is it known whether any of the New York City stations will remain on VHF after the conversion? Because currently all of the digital signals that I'm receiving are on UHF. So I'll pass it back to the net and we'll see if anyone knows the answer. And if they do, which? K2DLS.
Hey, JR, we got some good news for you. And Eric just gave it to us. That is, after the switchover on February 17th, 2009,
channel 7, 9, 11, and 13, which are now those various networks, ABC, WOR, PBS, and whatever. They are going to come back to their upper UHF channels with digital television. So all of your upper UHF, here we go, upper VHF channels, 7, 9, 11, and 13, will be digital television over the air broadcast. I bet that's what you're looking to, I bet you're going to be kind of happy to hear that. Back to you, JR.
I just supplied you with the website. I didn't ask you that any questions. I'm doing fine on my digital TVs upstate and down here. Matter of fact, upstate I went from three channels to 13 channels. Everything comes in no problem. So I think you want to address it to the other guy, W2NYF.
Yep. DLS is who I was, I think it was DLS that just asked that question. Was that true?
Yeah, affirmative. So, again, I'm not clear on the answer. Are you saying that the VHF stations will be on UHF, or the stations above Channel 7 on VHF will remain on VHF, KTDLS?
Yeah, I think that's Dan, I got you guys confused. Right now, Channel 7, 9, 11, and 13 are transmitting digital television on a UHF channel. After February 17th, they will be transmitting digital television back on the VHF channel, where you're watching analog television now. They're going to reclaim their analog channels for digital, and whether or not they also use the UHF is not clear. But the VHF will become digital channels. 7, 9, 11, 13 will be digital after February 17th. Back to you, K2DLS, K2RIW.
K2RIW and the net, K2DLS. Well, we'll have to see how this goes. I'm frankly hoping that everybody remains on UHF because I could deal with the one small antenna in the attic. Coincidentally, for analog, I did have a dedicated VHF antenna up there as well that I recently took down. But it is sitting up there, and it could go back up if need be. So I guess we'll know more in February. Back to the net, K2DLS.
The reason I think that VHF is good news, upper VHF channels becoming the digital channels in the future, is that in general, the insertion loss of trees is lower, the propagation loss is lower, the antenna gain in effective capture area is larger, for a whole bunch of reasons. Many people get a stronger signal on the upper VHF channels than they do the UHF channels, unless they put up a fairly elaborate UHF antenna. So I think they're going to come out better. The main reason why channels 2, 4, and 5 are not going to be used as much, and that's not clear to me yet, is that there, the interference you get from arcing over of power lines could be a serious detriment to the operation of those particular channels. Could or could not. The white bars you get across your television set on channel 2, 4, and 5, 2 and 4 in particular, to analog television is just a minor annoyance. To a digital converter, that particular kind of interference is fairly serious and could, under some circumstances, stop the operation of the digital converter. Okay, now I know Joe had a second question, probably on OFDM, and go right ahead, Joe. W2RYY, K2RYW in the tech net.
Yeah, I did, but I wanted to ask something in addition to the DTV converters. Being that if I'm going to be putting up an antenna, I'm looking to put up an antenna that's got enough gain, and if I need to, does putting up a or adding an amplifier to something like that cause any detriment to the signal? So I'm looking to put up something, if I have to put it up, that's going to give me a signal all the time. You know, rain, snow, whatever, however the weather changes, I'm going to have a good signal all the time and have enough, I guess we'd call it fade margin. So worst case, I'm always going to be able to get a signal digitally. If I can't get that directly with an antenna, will putting up an amplifier help or hurt my situation?
If the biggest variable there is what is the noise figure of your television set and what's the insertion loss of the cable. If you were able to buy a television set or a converter
that had a front-end noise figure of, let me pick a number, 4 dB. And if you did a real good job of installing the transmission line, a high-quality transmission line, between that converter and the antenna, so that you had 1 dB of insertion loss of the cable and a 4 dB noise figure of the front end, in that particular circumstance, putting a preamplifier in there, and I just recently received a report about the noise figure of some of these preamplifiers, which have numbers like 6, 7, and 8 dB of noise figure, you would get no improvement. Now, if you happen to have a really yucky cable, 100 feet of it, and you're getting 8 dB of loss in the cable, the transmission line, and you got a really yucky converter that's got a 10 dB noise figure, of course, in that situation, putting a line-driving preamplifier at the antenna is going to make an improvement. So the real question you're asking has got very little to do with what the television broadcaster is sending out or what the over-the-air propagation is like. When it comes to state-of-the-art sensitivity of your system, it's all in your ballpark, Joe, as I see it. What is the insertion loss of your transmission line, and what is the noise figure of the particular converter you're going to be using? W-H-U-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W on the TechNet.
Okay, so I guess you pretty much, this pretty much been exhausted as far as this subject can go. You can go on to the next one. I'm asking the question on, well, I think it's called a pronounced orthogonal frequency division multiplexer. And I've also seen this with the word coded in front of orthogonal. I'm just basically curious what this is because it sounds like something new to me. Maybe it's not. Can you explain it a little better?
Yeah, you're into a fairly deep subject here, Joe. And as a result of the email that you sent me on this particular subject last night, one of the first things I did was to simply Google the word OFDM plus Wikipedia. On Google, you put those four letters, Oscar Foxtrot, Delta Mike, orthogonal frequency multiplex, orthogonal frequency, OFDM. All of a sudden, I don't know what it stands for.
A digital
multiplex. No. Say it again. Was that digital multiplex?
Orthogonal frequency multiplex.
Orthogonal frequency. It's OFDM. What does the D stand for?
Digital.
So it is orthogonal frequency digital multiplex. Plus, plus Wikipedia. You put that into Google, and you'll get page after page of information. I didn't say it's going to be easy to understand. But I'm going to try to convey the concept to you. Let's assume now that you and I are setting up a communication channel. Doesn't matter if it's video, television, data, whatever. You and I are setting up a communication channel between your house in Sayville and my house in Huntington. And we desire to send 1 million bits of information per second. A megabit of information per second is what we decide to send. And you could do it with one particular carrier and choose your favorite method of modulation for transmitting that one carrier with that modulation on it. And the signal would be roughly 2 megacycles wide, but with most of the methods of modulation. And there are some kinds of modulation that are single sideband, like. So with that single carrier modulated signal, if we got a selective phase between your house and my house, I'd be getting a lot of dropout of the data in the time domain. In other words, if the selective phase goes in there for 2 seconds every minute, for 2 seconds every minute, I'm going to get a great big drop out of data. That's the conventional way of doing it. Now I'm going to tell you what OFDM would look like. One of the many, many techniques I could use for OFDM is to not transmit all of the megabits per second of data on the one carrier, but transmit not one carrier, but 1,000 carriers across the 1 megacycle of bandwidth. 1,000 individual carriers. And part of the magic of OFDM is you want those carriers to be coherently related to each other. They're all an exact multiple of frequencies separated from each other. In my particular example, they're going to be exactly 1 kilohertz apart. So I got 1,000 individual carriers, let's call them sub-carriers if you like, all exactly 1 kilohertz apart. And my original megabit of data per second, I'm now going to break it up into those 1,000 individual carriers. And so the exact same data rate would only require 1 kilohertz of data rate on each one of those carriers. So that's one way I could do it. I've now taken my megabit of data, I've broken up into 1,000 individual channels of 1 kilobit per second each.
and I'm sending it over 1,000 individual carriers. At first it sounds like no great gain. Well, there's some huge improvements you get. As long as I'm not getting a completely flat fade, if I'm getting a selective fade and some of those carriers drop out, and if I'm smart enough in the way I set up the forward error correcting code, in the way I'm sending the data, and one of the most popular techniques for OFDM is sending packets of data, where each packet could, in theory, have 256, they call it 255, bits of information per packet, but I don't send 255 bits, I send 233. I send 233 bits of information with 32 bits of extra data, which is the forward error correcting code. So my packet that could have been 255 bits is only 235 bits instead of 232 bits, and I've got these, 233, and I've got these extra 32 bits of data that's part of the error correcting code. If all of the packets of data I send on each of the carriers do that, I now can have some of those carriers drop I can now have some of those carriers drop out by selective fading, and the very smart computer at the receiving end can put it all back together. You end up, when you do this correctly, you end up with a very secure method of transmitting data. So this is a little bit of what OFDM is. It's called orthogonal because of the way the carriers are all very coherently related to each other. They've all got a little piece of the original information being sent in parallel, as opposed to the one single carrier with serial data of a megabit per second. I've now got 1,000 individual carriers with a kilobit per second of data, and each one has got its own little chunk of the data with this error correcting code built into the technique. This is a little bit of what it is. It becomes a much more secure error correcting technique. It just so happens that OFDM is being used to a degree on digital television transmission. It is the method of operation of your compact disc recorder, your DVD television, your discs for video. A hell of a lot of the data streams that you're using are really using these techniques. So it's got a lot of track record. It was invented in the late 60s. It's been around a while. It has only really become popular in the last 10 or 15 years, to my knowledge. It's a deep subject. As I said, you just start off with that particular Google search, and you'll get a lot more data than you know what to do with. I didn't say it's easy to understand at first. It's getting way beyond the simplistic Shannon laws of data transmission per channel. You end up with, when this is done correctly, the individual channels can have much, much weaker signals, terrible signal-to-noise ratios, with sometimes seemingly tremendous amounts of error in the original transmission, and the system is able to put it all back together and make it a clean signal with no dropouts. To me, 2RYY, K2RYW on the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, very good. That gives me some sort of understanding of what you talk about with this whole subject. I know I could look up a lot of stuff on Wikipedia and so forth, but it's easy when you got somebody like you who's very knowledgeable to kind of explain it piece by piece. Makes it much easier to understand. Okay, that's pretty much it for me as far as the questions for this evening. You can turn it over to the next guy in line here. K2RYW and TechNet, WH4YY.
And NNU needing a clarification. Okay, NNU. I think you signed in earlier and I forgot to get to you. Give me your full call and name, sir. K2RYW.
Gosh. Dick, shame on you. You don't recognize NNU anymore, right? This is November 2, November, November, any form, the name is Alex. Let's go back to the spectrum. For example, channel 7, it's occupying now on the analog channel 7, 174 to 180 megahertz. Will that frequency portion remain for the digital? They will transmit digital in the same frequency window? Over.
The answer, to my understanding, is absolutely yes, Alex. And yes, Alex, you signed in many times before, but if you didn't sign in within 1 week, I forget you. I got this very sharp cutoff in the memory. So it ain't you, it's me. Yes, 174 to 180 megacycle, channel 7 upper VHF television right now, analog, will, to my knowledge, at midnight on February 17th of 2009, will suddenly switch over to digital transmission, digital television transmission on that exact frequency region. Channel 7, Channel 9, Channel 11, and Channel 13 will do that. To some people, that's good news, because some people have a lot better television reception on 7 through 13 than they do on UHF. And we amateur radio operators have no trouble with UHF. We know how to put our antennas up high, run good low feed line laws, put the antennas up above the trees and whatever. There's a hell of a lot of people that, when it comes to UHF television, are using nothing but a darn little loop of wire on the back of the set that was supplied by the manufacturer. And they're getting some pretty snowy picture there on UHF television right now. And digital-wise, that ain't going to work. So for you, I think you got a nade, Alex. N2NNU, K2RIW.
Yes, it's over you. Okay. That's good news. I don't have to buy a new antenna. How about the channels relabeled now 1,000-something and 2,000-something? What frequencies will they operate?
Okay. UHF television, quite a number of digital channels will also be transmitting on UHF. Between channels, I was going to say 14 through 50. By the way, UHF television, in theory, in the old days, went from 14 to 84. Well, those upper ones became cellular telephone. The new channels that will be left for UHF capability for digital television go up to, I think it's channel 50, and in our particular area, down to something like channel 20. So 20 to 50 will still exist for some number of UHF channels. And if you go to that particular website that we mentioned earlier, I forgot where the hell I wrote it down, but you know the ones I'm talking about. That particular website will tell you exactly what channels are in your operating area right now when you give it an address, and a significant number of them will continue. So if you also have a UHF channel, there's a hell of a lot more channels you're going to want to watch. The good news when it comes to digital television on the VHF channels, many of them will have two or three pieces of programming material on that same channel. When you watch Channel 7 right now, you see one analog piece of information, VHF television. When it becomes digital, there'll be two or three apparent channels of information in that one frequency range. That's the way the digital works. I wonder if that makes some sense to you, Alex. Go ahead.
Yes, it's over you. Yeah. Strong tower on the river bank. I have a pretty damn good view downtown and to New Jersey. I catch on the air about 50 or 60 channels, and some of them even with on digital. I put me on a cell, one of those Hopagi little sticks that you plug into the computer, the VIN-TV HVR 950. Cost me $20. And believe it or not, with that little stick antenna that it came, I can catch most of the channels. However, some of them are quite far, so I need an external antenna. I was wondering if I should buy a new one or whatever. But if they're all in the same frequency range for which the antenna is meant to operate now, that means that there is no reason to buy a new antenna. Thank you, Dick. And to end, you're going back to sleep.
I can't believe you're really going back to sleep, Alex. He's bragging. Okay, I think that was LYU. I'm not quite sure. The person, whoever it was, said it very fast. Try again. Go ahead.
Roger, KSW. I have you box operated from Radio Shack maybe about 3 months ago. And right now I'm using the box. I've got three channel 7. One is 71, 72, and 73. One is a sports channel, one is the weather, and one is speak Spanish. And I got channel 50. It's video with cars in New York. And channel 50. And a bunch of channels. And I got a lot of pictures. Nicely clean.
Sounds real good, Dan. When you're watching 71, 72, and 73, right now they're not on the same frequency. 71 is the 174 to 180 megacycles. 72 and 73 right now are a UHF channel, and your box is making it simple for you. In the future, I think the 71, 72, and 73 will all be on 174 to 180 megacycles. That's my understanding. And when Eric comes back, he's going to make that clear to us, more clear to us over the coming weeks. So we did have another person who signed in. I hope we didn't put him to sleep. That was Doug, KB2SNW, I think it is. Sorry, KB2NJC, Bill. KB2 New Jersey, Charlie. Bill, are you still there?
K2LH
and KTDLS.
Come back.
This is KB2NJC. Hi, thanks for letting me in. I think I have a quickie question. I think you guys answered yesterday for me. I don't have a lot of room, which has, of course, it's an antenna question. I was looking to put up an 80 meter. I just want to know if I can coil it, but shorten the length to keep electrically the same.
Okay, DLS, we've got you on the list. Don't worry. You came after Bill when it comes to the original sign-in, if I got my list here correct. Any antenna, no matter what wavelength you're on, can be shrunk down to make it smaller in size. Any dipole-like antenna. You can zigzag it. You can put loading coils at the beginning, the bend, at the middle of the dipole, somewhere halfway out to, on the arms of the dipole, or capacitive top hats at the end. There's a whole lot of ways of physically shrinking the size of the antenna, but keeping it resonant. Lots and lots of ways of doing that. Zigzag, coiling, top hat capacitors, starlight loading, and all kinds of combinations. Every one of those will work. And the hard thing to believe, and this is the part that to many guys is controversial, is that if you make that compacted antenna out of high-quality materials, the gain stays the same. You only lose half or six-tenths of a dB, in theory, if you make it out of lossless materials. That's the good news. The bad news is that whatever bandwidth your dipole had before, when you make it physically smaller, the Q of that radiating network increases. That's a fancy way of saying the bandwidth goes down pretty fast. If your 80-meter dipole used to give you an acceptable standing wave ratio from 3.6 to 3.8 before, and you shrink it down to something real small, maybe it's going to be centered at 3.7 and only be usable plus or minus 25 kilohertz, so to speak. It's going to become more narrowband in its standing wave ratio, and its radiation resistance will become a lower number. If it used to be a 70-ohm antenna, it's going to become a 20-ohm antenna. But if you're smart enough to be able to use a good antenna tuner, the right kind of a feed line, impedance matching network, all of this is doable. The infinitesimal dipole, and you can confirm this out of John Krause's book. It's the book called Antennas, 1950, McGraw-Hill. That was the first edition, and it's now in its third edition. And he's now a silent key, I believe. But John Krause, who wrote the Bible on antennas, has a chapter about the infinitesimal dipole. As you make the dipole smaller and smaller and keep resonating it, it becomes more and more narrow in bandwidth.
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
But as long as you're willing to use lossless materials, you get the exact same gain, the exact same performance, except much more narrow band. So once you're willing to accept those side effects of physically shrinking the antenna, the good news is you can get the exact same performance. Over to you, Bill. KB2NJC, and there's lots of ways of doing it. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Comment.
Alex, we'll get to you in a minute. Bill first. Go ahead, Bill.
Gentlemen, I thank you very much for your time. I appreciate your input with a crazy question for me anyway. This is KB2NJC, and we are listening. Thank you.
Okay. So, many of us have a backyard that's nowhere near big enough for an 80-meter dipole or 160-meter dipole, and therefore a lot of us say, well, I have to give up that band. No, you don't. Obviously, by the so-called isotron antenna, which is a drastically shrunk-down antenna that you can have in the apartment with you, it's possible to do 90% efficiency radiation with an extremely small antenna. Alex, sounds like you've got some further questions on this. You got it, Alex.
Okay. Let me mention that any antenna has what is called also an illumination area, meaning that I have a problem when I'm talking about antennas and the word gain. You have to take in consideration in that antenna is a bidirectional device, and it will have a different quote-unquote gain on transmit than on receive. So let's take receive, because this is a critical part of our operations. Let's assume that you have an antenna 20 meters long, and it will receive 10 microvolts at its feeding point. If you take this antenna and you shorten it to half, you will not get any more 10 microvolts. You will get 5 microvolts, all other things being equal. So considering this fact, now you lost some of the gain to half. Also, its pattern is changing, no matter what you're saying. That was a comment. Back to you.
Yeah, Eric recognized, going to get you in a second. The comments that you just made, Alex, good, solid, common sense. Dead wrong. Lots and lots of people have fallen into that trap. First of all, every antenna that's made out of linear materials, in other words, you're not putting any amplifiers or circulators or whatever in it. It's an ordinary dipole made out of wire, and you got an LC network that does the impedance matching, and you got some kind of a feed line going to it. Every antenna that's made out of linear materials must obey the law of reciprocity. Whatever performance you get on transmit, you have to get the exact same performance on reception, or you're violating. Physically shrink an antenna down in its physical size, but re-resonate it by these loading techniques of coils and ferrites and top loading capacitors and whatever. Physically, the antenna became smaller. Common sense would lead you to believe that the effective capture area of the antenna became smaller. Good common sense. Dead wrong. The process of resonating that antenna in a lossless manner brings back the effective capture area. Effective capture area is a highly misunderstood area, a situation. Let me give you an example. A full half-wave dipole on 80 meters in free space. It's a 132-foot-long piece of 14-gauge wire. And in the center, I've got an egg insulator, and I've got my ballon and my 70-ohm coax cable connected right there. That piece of 14-gauge on a sunny day casts a shadow on the ground of approximately 1 square foot. Foot of reed and feeding a 3.8 megacycle signal into it. The fact that it's resonant means that the signal traveling down that wire bounces back and forth roughly 30 times before it gets radiated into space. That's what transmission is like. What you and I call resonating is making it the right length so that all of those 30 bounce.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
What you and I call resonance is making it the right electrical length so that those 30 bounces all stay in step. They all stay co-phase. That process of resonating, where the signal is bouncing many times before it radiates on transmission and is doing the exact same thing on reception, the magic of resonance is that 1 square foot of wire has a real effective capture area on reception of 8,500 square feet, and I'm not kidding you. I can trace that to the Bureau with all the good rules and laws and formulas. Gain area is a gain lambda squared over 4 pi. You plug in the numbers. Gain equals lambda squared. Area is gain lambda squared over 4 pi. And you take the dBs and make them real numbers, you'll find out that that dipole on 80 meters, 8,500 square feet, even though I've got 1 square foot of wire. If I take that 132-foot long dipole and make it one-half the length, you would think I'm going to get one-quarter of the area. If I manage to re-resonate it losslessly, I'll get back 90-some-odd% of that 8,500 square feet. The best way I can prove this to you is that lots of guys have run into the problem where they put up an 80-meter dipole at 50 feet above the ground, and right across the street to them, parallel, is the Con Ed wiring or the Long Island Lighting Company wiring that's at the exact same altitude, right in direction that they want to talk, the guy in London they want to talk to.
so they assume they're in the shadow of that LIPA or Con Ed wiring. The LIPA or Con Ed wiring is not resonating on 80 meters, unless you're very unlucky. It is casting a shadow on your antenna of 1 square foot, or 5 square feet, because it's a bigger diameter wire. But 5 square feet of shadow on your antenna, which is 8,500 square feet of effective area, means it's an extremely minor perturbation. You may not like the static that that wiring is making, but it's not affecting the pattern or the gain. Once you realize that, you realize that all these guys that put egg insulators on their guy wires and they put the, make them out of glass line, they're wasting their time. The guy wires are not there. They're transparent. A number of people have run into this situation and said, why in the world is that working? So,
repeater, timeout, repeater, timeout, cancel.
The magic of resonance brings that area back. You will get that same 10 microvolts back from your particular example, or 90-some-odd% of it. There is an extremely slight pattern change when you go from a full dipole to a half wave to an infinitesimal dipole. The donut pattern fills in a little bit more broadly, and therefore you lose 0.6 dB on the broadside gain. That's all. I know this doesn't seem to make sense the first time you hear it, but there's some awful good books that I can back this one up on, Eric. Alex. Let me find out how bad it sounds to you at first. N2, NNU, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. I don't know. An antenna is a... Well, not the antenna. When we have a radiating system, it is a system composed of many elements. The antenna itself, the wire that we were speaking, is one of the systems, one of the parts of the system. The matching elements are another part of the system. The feeder is another part, and the generator is another part. I was talking about the antenna because you were talking about antennas. You can take this antenna and have a matching feeder directly into it without resonating anything. You just construct your feeder to match directly into the shortened antenna, and then you don't have anything resonating. So there is the problem. We have to be able to separate the problems into little pieces and address each one in their own order. Antenna is antenna, matching system is antenna, feeding is another thing. So I was talking about antenna, Dick.
You and I are talking about the same thing, but we're using different vocabulary. Now I'm going to become more general. Anything that you and I, Alex, call an antenna is a radiating system. The radiating system, I'm going to work from the antenna back. The radiating system consists of the thing you and I call antenna, the thing you and I call balun or impedance matching at the antenna, the transmission line, the antenna tuner, the tank circuit of the transmitter, and eventually the tube that's doing the transmitting, or the transistor. That complete radiating system, you and I will resonate it first, then we have the ability to radiate. Everything you and I call antenna, which really is a subset of a radiating system, you will resonate that system first, electronically resonate it. That means all the signals bouncing around and all of those components will stay in step on those 30 bounces required for that radiation to take place. Once you resonate that radiating system with low-loss components, you can get 99% efficiency, in theory, even though the antenna has been shrunk down. So the antenna itself as a component, because you've done something funny to it, like making it too small, it itself is not resonant yet. When you connect the rest of the system to it, you force it into resonance. So whether I put the loading coil at the bottom of my short dipole, whether I put it at the antenna, whether I put it in the middle of the feed line, whether I put it back at the antenna tuner, or whether I put that back into the tank circuit of the transmitter, those are my choices. As long as I'm using low-loss components all the way along that line, I can re-resonate that system. I can make it a high-efficiency radiating system. Once I resonate it, it will radiate. You and I can make an antenna that's non-resonant, you know, a rhombic antenna with a loading resistor at the end, but we have to use a lot of wavelength of wire to make that work well. And anything that I make that's reasonable in size, half wavelength in size, that I don't resonate it, hey, you're going to radiate a signal, but it's going to be 30 decibels weaker because I no longer have all of those bounces that are...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
I no longer have all of those bounces that are staying in step. Radiation is hard. We all want to believe that that signal flows down our transmission line, hits the antenna. We want to believe it walks along the antenna and then jumps into space. That only a couple percent of that signal radiates into space on the first pass down that wire. Something like 97% of that energy is still left when it hits the end of that wire and it bounces back. You and I have the obligation to make sure that when it bounces for the next 30 times required for that signal to finally radiate, that all of those bounces stay in step. That's a fancy way of saying resonance. We must resonate the radiating system. Once we do resonate the radiating system, it will radiate all of that signal on transmission. By the law of reciprocity, it has all of that exact same effective capture area on reception. It's hard to believe that 1 square foot of wire acts like 8,500 square feet. And if I make the dipole half the size, where it's only half a square feet of wire shadow on the ground, but I re-resonate it with loading coils or an antenna tuner or whatever, I get back almost all of the same 8,500 square feet. That's a hard one to believe. If you and I had eyes that worked at 8.7 megacycles, and we looked at that dipole on 80 meters, we would see a great big black oval in space where all the energy that comes into that oval gets sucked up by that wire, it goes down that feed line, and moves the S-meter on your receiver. That's the magic of wireless. I know you've got to hear this a whole lot of times before it's going to make any sense. And lots of guys are going to argue this one to the wee hours of the morning, and I understand where they're coming from. N2NNU, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. The issue is that on receive, all of those things do not apply because you do not have to have a resonating system. On receive, you can have everything goes. Take a wire, put it in, and you receive. If you shorten that wire half, you will have half of the signal on receive. The same will happen on the transmit, because the radiating power is now reciprocal of the illumination area, what you call the capture area. Anyhow, this is a domain that we don't really know what's happening, because this is where many people are spending billions of dollars to have this big atom smasher in Switzerland, just to figure out what the hell is going out at the interface between the antenna and the air. If Mr. Higgs has it correctly, then we will know, we will really meet the God particle. Dick, we do not know how antenna radiates. We do not know that. So let's not talk about it anymore. That's all. End to an end.
Au contraire. Who's the we that doesn't know? Lots of people have written books where they think they know. I'm reading some of those books, and I agree with an awful lot of what I hear. I agree with everything you've just said, Eric, but I don't agree with the interpretation of it. I can take my full 80-meter dipole on 80 meters, plug it into my receiver, tune the 3.7 megs, listen to a guy's signal, and he's 40 dB over S9 on my S-meter. I disconnect that beautiful dipole, and I plug in a random length of wire, 3 feet long, and I plug it into the center conductor of that connector on the back of that receiver. I still hear that same guy, but roughly the same signal-to-noise ratio, with a random piece of wire that is non-resonant. I agree with that. But now, if I'm enough of a scientist, and I look at the S-meter with that 3-foot piece of wire, which is non-resonant, instead of 40 dB over S9, he's now S4. I've lost a whole lot of decibels of reception because it is not resonant. And if I tried to transmit into that 3-foot piece of wire, nobody would hear me. The reason why the receiver is so forgiving, let me drop, is because the band is so noisy. An antenna on 80 meters, looking at the horizon, sees what it thinks is a 40 or 50 decibel noise figure. That horizon, that ionosphere, and all those thunderstorms that are going on.